Set your course for the Huff
Takes Podcast.
Welcome to Huff Takes. I'm Eric Geller.
And I'm Grace Seegers.
And Haley Birdwilt could not be with us for this episode, but that's okay because this time around, Grace and I are going to talk about The Acolyte, the upcoming Star Wars TV show that's supposed to offer us a look at an entirely new era in the Star Wars timeline with a darker and more mysterious tone than most of the content that we've seen before. And our sort of news peg for this, if you will, is that the star of the show, Amanda Stenberg, recently did an interview with C Magazine, in which she talked a little bit about what it's like to join the Star Wars universe and a little bit of what The Acolyte is going to be about. So I figured we would revisit this show, first time we've talked about it in depth since it was announced as part of the upcoming slate, because I think that there's a lot of interesting stuff here that could point the way toward the future of Star Wars in terms of tone and also in terms of the eras that we're going to be exploring. So maybe we could start with some basics. So let me just read the sentence or two that StarWars.com included about The Acolyte when they announced the cast of the show. Here it is. The Acolyte is a mystery thriller that will take viewers into a galaxy of shadowy secrets and emerging dark side powers in the final days of the High Republic era. A former Padawan reunites with her Jedi Master to investigate a series of crimes, but the forces they confront are more sinister than they ever anticipated. Dun, dun, dun. So that's very interesting. The cast is stacked. In addition to Amanda Stenberg, we have folks like Manny Jacinto, Daphne Keene, Jodie Turner-Smith, Carrie Ann Moss. So some names that folks will recognize from some of their favorite TV shows and movies. It's coming sometime this year. We don't know exactly when. And that's pretty much all we know about it at this point. The showrunner is Leslie Headland. You might know her from Russian Doll, a very popular show. I got a few episodes into it. I did not get enough into it to keep watching, but I might have to revisit it. But I want to talk to you, Grace, about what we know so far and what it can tell us about the show. So let's start with the timeline. The show is set at the end of the High Republic era. This is an era that Lucasfilm has previously only explored in books and comics. This is their big literature project starting at the beginning of 2020, 200 years before the Phantom Menace, if I'm remembering that correctly, possibly before A New Hope. I'm not sure, but 150, 200 years before the Skywalker story. It's a time of peace that is interrupted by a conflict with a group of marauders. It sees the Jedi face their greatest threat yet. And this show is at the end of that time period, still a time of galactic peace for the most part. Are we excited to go this far back in time at this point in the franchise and kind of get away from the Skywalker era? I'd be curious, Grace, what you think.
I mean, I personally love lore. I'm a huge lore head. If there is lore in a fantasy or a sci-fi series I am reading or watching, that I just love it. I love maps at the beginning of books. I love appendices. I love incredibly detailed backstories. So yeah, I'm excited to see the time period that the show is depicting. I haven't actually read any of the High Republic novels. If I had, I would be curious to see how much they keep with canon, because as we've previously discussed before, it seems like the TV shows don't really seem to care for the canon that has been established by the books. But good news for me is that I haven't read any of the books, so even if they do mess with canon, I will neither know nor care. But I am excited to see the height of the Jedi, a time when they were more powerful. It kind of reminds me, I don't know if you read / watched House of the Dragon, which is the 200 years before prequel of Game of Thrones. And obviously, this is a very different world, show, series. But it kind of reminds me, from what very little we know, of bringing a world back to a time of when there was a different balance of power. So in The Acolyte, when back to when the Jedi were really at the height of their power in House of the Dragon, back when there were a whole bunch of dragons and the Targaryens were in power. So I think that there's some fun potential as a prequel series to introduce viewers to this time period. And if it's done well, you know, House of the Dragon is super popular. This, I feel like, has the opportunity to be a real breakout hit. But, you know, Star Wars shows have had a very mixed track record.
Yeah, and as someone who has read the High Republic stuff, all the books and the comics, I will say it's a great time period because it does give you the Jedi Order in a format that you never saw before, which is they're basically as big as they've ever been, and they aren't fighting a huge war. They're not being drawn into the kinds of corrupting conflicts that really start to drag them toward their doom in the prequel trilogy. So that stuff hasn't yet come up. They're very capable, but they are not as troubled as they are in the prequel era. And then, of course, the inciting, you know, conflict of the High Republic happens, and they have to deal with not only this group of marauders, but also, spoiler alert, these animals that can basically kill them immediately and are immune to the Force and prey on Force users, which challenges their notions of their relationship with the Force, how to fight an enemy that is basically immune to their Force powers. It's a fascinating set of stories that gets into, like, individual Jedis having different relationships with the Force, and how some of them see it as an ocean and some of them see it as a symphony, and a lot of great exploration of, like, what it means to be a Jedi in a time period that doesn't have the baggage of the Skywalker saga. So even though this is happening at the end of that, I am excited to see what vibes, for lack of a better term, they pull in from the books and comics, what hints we see that the books and comics happened, you know, sometime before this TV show happens. I'm excited for that. I will say I don't see Dave Filoni's name attached to this, so I'm not quite worried that they're going to just change things to suit their creative vision. I think that there is probably going to be a respect for the books and comics that, as much as I do like Dave Filoni, you know, he has not necessarily been the biggest champion of consistency with the books and comics. So I am excited for... It's the first time, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's the first time that we're going to see a live-action TV show in a new era that was created in the books and comics. I mean, I guess to some extent you could say the sequel trilogy, but that comes after the books that they put out in the New Republic era, quite a bit after. So I think this will be the first time that we see them try to adapt some of the trappings of this entirely new era, and see what that's like. And I will say, for those who are interested in High Republic continuity with the TV show, Rebecca Henderson, who's an actress, will be on the show playing an older version of a main character Jedi who was introduced in the books. So significantly older version of the character. I'm very interested to see how they figure out how to establish some continuity there and make it clear to the folks who know her from the books, like, oh, that's who that is, right? I can see that continuity in that character. I want to ask about a few of Leslie Headland's teases for the show. She said a couple very intriguing things about the show, and I'd love to get your perspective. So I'm just going to read these, and maybe we can talk about them. Here's the first quote. It's from the perspective of the bad guys, or the villains of Star Wars. These are people who are using the Force in their own way, dipping into the darker sides of the Force, and are doing it without being sanctioned by the larger institution, which in this case is the Jedi. Unquote. She's also described the Darksiders as the underdogs of the show, because again, there are so many Jedi out there and presumably very few Darksiders. And I thought this was very interesting. She's compared the show to Frozen meets Kill Bill. And the Frozen part is what's interesting to me, because she says it's about, quote, the villain actually being a powerful, misunderstood woman, unquote. And then I guess the Kill Bill thing is there's going to be a lot of sophisticated martial arts on the show as well. So that's exciting. But Grace, what do you think about this idea of turning the tables a little bit and giving us the dark side characters as the scrappy underdogs who are experimenting with something that is prescribed by the larger institution?
I will be really interested to see how much of those villainous, or how many of those villainous characters are actually in the Jedi Order and how much they are working outside of it. So if she's referring to people who are using the Force in their own way, does that mean we're going to see people outside of the Order doing their own thing, or are we also going to see people within the Order secretly doing something and subverting the powers of the Jedi for their own ends? Are we going to see sort of the beginning of the corruption within the Jedi that we see in the prequel series? Does it take root here? So I'll be really interested to see that. And the idea of Darksiders as the sort of underdogs, that's intriguing to me. I feel like I can't pass judgment on it until I see it. But I do like the idea of not really knowing who you're supposed to root for. I think that can be a very fun trope when done well. As for the Frozen meets Kill Bill, I'm more interested in that Kill Bill quote or analogy, because Kill Bill, as you probably know, is a very, very violent and gory movie. Yes. So is she just talking about, like, it'll be stylistically, like, powerful, badass woman? Or is she saying it's going to be, like, rated R, like there's gonna be violence and blood? And I would suspect the former, because it's Star Wars, but you never know. And I would certainly be very interested to see a more rated R Star Wars show, as we've previously discussed. Also, I love a girl boss. I love a villainous girl boss. I am excited to see whatever that may be.
Yeah, I think the moral ambiguity element, in terms of, like, who are the main characters? Are we sympathizing with them? What do they want? Can we imagine ourselves wanting that too? Is an interesting thing for Star Wars to do, because, again, you go back to Star Wars roots. It's a fairy tale with very clear good and evil. And, you know, sometimes I like it when they push the boundaries of who are the main characters, who are we rooting for. Other times I feel like there's a way to do it well, but there's a way to stray from the founding vision of Star Wars. And that's not to say that you can only do rehashes of A New Hope. It's just to say that embedded in A New Hope and the whole original trilogy are basic principles of storytelling that I think all Star Wars has to hold dear. And I'm struggling to see how this is going to align with that. I mean, it's going to be a fresh take, right? It's going to be characters that we previously haven't been, you know, rooting for necessarily. But I think, you know, it's going to walk a fine line between showing us people who, you know, we start to sympathize with in certain ways, even as we hold them at a distance because we know that they're the bad guys, but then maybe tipping over into, like, losing sight of the true core morality of Star Wars. I don't want the show to try to present Darksiders as heroes if what they're doing, you know, when they tap into the dark side is hateful and discriminatory or destructive, right? I'll be very interested to see, what are they doing when they're dipping into the dark side in this way? Why are they doing it? What are they trying to accomplish? And one thing I will say is, currently in the High Republic, there's a character who, in order to defeat these force-killing monsters, basically strayed too far from the light side and has been corrupted, but still wants to help the Jedi defeat these monsters, and the Jedi have to figure out how far are they willing to go in working with this guy and condoning his methods. And that is an interesting idea for me. If they're dipping into the dark side to accomplish a good, admirable goal, then you don't have to worry so much about, like, well, they're trying to make these mass murderers, you know, sympathetic by showing that they have a social life, right? I don't want that. But I want something that's a true gray area to expand our conception of who can be a main character. And to be fair, Leslie Henlon also had a quote where she said, "We have more Jedi than you've seen in any of the Star Wars content, but at the same time, I think you see more morally ambiguous characters than you've seen in other Star Wars content." So I think there is an attempt to make them, again, morally ambiguous, right? Not just, like, clear-cut bad guys who have a heart of gold or who have, you know, a spouse or a group of friends, and so what if they're the bad guys because they have friends? I think it's like, they're tapping into the dark side, but they're not classic Sith Darksiders with a capital D and a capital S. But maybe I could just be reading too much into that quote.
I think you do raise a good point about the need for these morally ambiguous and perhaps even negative figures to not be portrayed in a way that appears to be glorifying them and that being at odds with the original morality of Star Wars. But I do also think that no matter how nuanced a portrait can be, there are always going to be people who misinterpret. There are always people who think, like, actually, Thrawn's the good guy and Thrawn is right. Or people who watch Breaking Bad and are like, yeah, we should aspire to be like Walter White. Like, they're just people who watch shows, see the morally ambiguous anti-hero or downright villain and are like, yeah, no, actually that's good. So obviously you can try to mitigate some of that in your storytelling. But also I don't think there's a need to dumb down or make it overly simplistic either. And I think you're right, Eric, that the trick is to really find a way to explore the gray in a way that is interesting. And we've seen with Andor, which is probably the most morally ambiguous Star Wars content, definitely the most morally ambiguous show, like, there's a way to do that and to do it well. So I have high hopes that this can be accomplished. And I think that, judging by Leslie Headland's quotes, she has some really intriguing ideas about what she wants this show to be and about even who the Jedi are. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to put my faith in her.
I would be curious to know more about how you think the show should toe the line of, you know, exploring that darkness. And again, you know, she said, you know, we're going to see more action in this show than we've seen before. We're going to see action in a different way than we usually see in Star Wars. It has to still be Star Wars. How did they find the right balance of making it like, wow, I've never seen anything like that before, but also people, you don't want people going like, that barely felt like a Star Wars TV show.
You know what? I'm actually going to push back a little against that, because, yeah, it still needs to feel like Star Wars, but does it really need to feel like Star Wars? So what I mean by that is it's set in the Star Wars universe, and it will contend with archetypes, characters, a world created by George Lucas originally and consisting within the Star Wars universe. But when you look at Andor, for example, that's a TV show I've been able to recommend to people who don't like Star Wars and have had them watch it and really enjoy it, because it didn't feel like the quote unquote traditional Star Wars that they were used to and didn't like. It was in many ways a political thriller set within the trappings of the Star Wars universe. And I would argue that it is fundamentally a Star Wars show because it has important things to say about hope and the eventual triumph of good over evil. But it's also just a very nuanced portrait that just happens to take place in the Star Wars universe. So I think The Acolyte is already going to be much more Star Wars-y because it's about the Jedi. And the Jedi are a fundamental part of the Star Wars universe. In Andor, there weren't any Jedi. So it already had a degree of removal. In this show, you're going to be right in the very heart of one of the defining characteristics of the Star Wars universe, which is the Force and Force users. So I think it's already going to be Star Wars-y. But I also don't think that there should necessarily be that pressure to feel Star Wars-y, as it were, because it's possible to tell an interesting story within that universe that fans will feel like can be true to that universe, but could also be accessible for people who aren't as big fans.
Yeah, I think you're right that there's room for something that pushes the boundaries of what Star Wars can be in terms of things like tone. I guess it maybe if I were to clarify what I mean by, like, you don't want it to not feel like Star Wars, I think there are some lines that Star Wars should never cross. So one of them would be, like, explicit sexual content, right? Pretty obvious, you know, I think most folks would probably agree that that is something that just too narrowly limits what the audience for Star Wars, right? I would say another one is extreme violence. So I'm talking like John Wick level, right? I don't necessarily think that anybody has described this as having John Wick levels of violence, but like thinking about the tone and thinking about, again, the amount of action, the amount of like martial arts, I worry about it leaning too much on violence, you know, perhaps even rising to the level of some kind of graphic violence. And I just don't think that's going to happen, because I think that if there's one thing Disney's good at, it is trying to sand the edges off of, like, you know, transgressive media. And in this case, and this case alone, I would say that if they are trying to restrain some of those impulses, that's a good thing, because I do think that would limit the audience for this kind of content too much. You know, Andor, I think as much as we talk about it being adult and being something where, like, a lot of that stuff is not necessarily going to resonate with kids, I do think kids can watch it and get enough of it to enjoy it. I worry about something that leans too heavily on graphic violence as an example. And maybe we're not expecting that here, but I guess I don't want to indulge too much in, you know, that in sort of overly gratuitous displays of violence to try to, like, move the story along or whatever. But hopefully I'm just kind of overreacting here. I don't know.
You know what? In both of these cases, I gotta say, I'm kind of like, you know what? I'd be fine with it. And again, because it's a TV show, it's not a movie. If this were a movie, a Star Wars movie, I would totally agree with you. I would say those are lines that can't be crossed. But this is a TV show on Disney Plus, and I think it's completely fine for it to be for a different audience. I think it's fine for it to be not for kids. I also don't think that's what it's going to end up being. I don't think there will be sexual content or John Wick level violence. But if there were, it wouldn't upset me. I'm fine with there being Star Wars for different ages. When you have something like Disney Plus, when you have your own streaming service that can do a whole bunch of different TV shows, I don't necessarily see a problem with making a show that's explicitly for kids and a show that's for adults and shows that are for everyone in between, for anyone. So I would be fine with John Wick level violence. I love the John Wick movie, so I would think that was dope. For me, that's not a red line because it's a show. If it were a movie, I would agree with you there. But it's not going to make a bajillion dollars at the box office. It's going to stream on a service that many people do not have. So that's, I guess, the reason why I don't share that trepidation that you have. But like you said, I also don't think it's going to go there. I would be very, very surprised if this was in more like House of the Dragon, Game of Thrones, in that, oh yeah, there's a lot of sex and violence. That would be genuinely very shocking to me.
Yeah, and I think, you know, maybe there's a conversation to be had about, like, to what extent should Disney, as the steward of the franchise, generally try to keep everything pretty accessible to anybody who wants to jump in, so that you can feel like you are getting the full story. And maybe, you know, even as I ask that question, maybe that's just a relic of a time when Star Wars was all about one family story, right? Maybe in an era where we move beyond the Skywalker saga, there is less of an impulse by the corporate overlords to say, everybody needs to be able to understand the whole narrative through line of the story we're telling here. Because now they're telling stories that are completely unrelated. And so if there's something happening over there 200 years before The Phantom Menace and you wouldn't let your 13-year-old watch it, like maybe that's fine because it won't detract from their understanding of Luke Skywalker's family story, right? Maybe that's kind of the answer to this is like as they start telling new stories, they're more comfortable closing off certain stories to certain people because of whatever legal or, you know, moral, you know, constraints folks might have, right? I mean, that's kind of what I initially went into this is like, I don't want somebody to not be able to let their kid watch a show that is building out this universe, but maybe when it's not just one big story, that's okay.
They have plenty of other shows to watch, you know?
Yeah.
If it's not, if someone comes on screen and the Acolyte and says, hello, I am Anakin Skywalker's great, 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 great grandmother or whatever, then maybe those concerns about it all existing within the same family, as you say, would be more immediate. But I doubt that is the case, although it would be funny.
Or maybe somebody's like, somehow Palpatine was born. So there's another interesting thing about the show, which is, as we said, the High Republic is a time, generally a time of peace. So the show, one thing we know about it, they've said this, it's not going to be focused on some big galactic conflict. And Emanuel Stenberg has said that without focusing on a war, you can really focus on people and tell a story about moral ambiguity of people rather than trying to link this to some bigger conflict. Is that interesting to you, Grace, or would you prefer this to be rooted in some bigger conflict?
Well, you know, it's called Star Wars, not Star Peace, but the show is called The Acolyte, not Star Wars. So all of that is a very glib way of saying I think it's perfectly fine to look at that period in history, but also, I do think it's interesting because war brings a lot of opportunity for ambiguity and nuance in storytelling, but that's also a chance. There's also a chance to look at that in peace as well. And we know that whatever occurs at this point will, tangentially or not, contribute to a war 200 years down the line. So I do think that there's the opportunity to look at root causes of some of those issues. And I'm very in favor of a more character-driven story. As much as I love lore, and I truly do, characters are what make the lore work.
I love the point that you made about how inevitably we are going to go from here to the Skywalker saga, because I'm curious what you think about this, but personally, I suspect that Disney will not be able to resist slipping some kind of forward-looking nod or wink to the Skywalker saga into this show somehow, right? It's not going to be a cutaway to Palpatine being born, but it's probably it's going to be something more thematic, right? And what I mean by that is, we're going to start to see elements of society slipping towards that prequel era corruption and decay. We're going to start to see indications of how we get there. And in fact, that's something that Leslie Headlin, I believe, has talked about, which is when she watched the prequels, she wanted to know, how did we get there? And I don't think it's going to be the Game of Thrones, like, here's how the people that you know are born and here's how those houses maneuver into position. I think it's going to be, here's how the structural forces are such that Palpatine, when he comes along, can start playing them like a fiddle. And as much as I'm here for something that's disconnected from the Skywalker saga, a character study, I got to be honest, I think they're missing an opportunity here to start showing some of those structural, you know, musical chairs being moved into place. But is that something that you are interested in seeing?
Well, we don't know that they're missing that opportunity yet, because it could be dealing with those structural forces. So I wouldn't go that far, but I do think that one of the things that makes Star Wars so intriguing has always been the politics. That's what I enjoy the most about the prequels. That's what I love about shows like Andor, even like the Clone Wars and Rebels. I think that both of those shows have a really sort of delightful perspective and depiction of galactic politics. So I would be very interested to see some of those larger structural forces. And again, I think seeing it through the perspective of the Jedi, how the Jedi operate, and perhaps the corruption at the heart of the Jedi beginning here, I think that would be very interesting.
Yeah, and as much as I guess maybe let me clarify, I'm not saying that they're already missing the opportunity. I just think if they don't do something like that, it would be a missed opportunity. Yeah. But I want it to be very tangential. I want it to be very much in the background. I don't want this to turn into the House of the Dragon for the Skywalker saga. And I don't think it will, to be clear. I don't think that it will. I think they've got a clear vision for what they're doing here, and it's not tethered to the Skywalker saga. And I'm excited about that. I do wonder how they are going to... I wonder if the tone is just going to blow us all away in terms of surprise at, like, again, to our earlier point, like, how is this a Star Wars show, right? Like, with the character focus, with the focus on a different type of character, without the big conflict to drive the story, I wonder how they're going to keep us hooked from episode to episode. I wonder what the inciting conflict and drama will be if it's more of a character study. Again, it's not something we have really seen before in Star Wars. People might be tempted to say, like, oh, the Obi-Wan TV show, the Ahsoka TV show, right? Because those are about individuals, but they're not really, right? The Ahsoka show is essentially just a Rebels sequel. The Obi-Wan show is just filling in story points that this character happens to be at the center of. It's not really a character study of him. So I think that we're in for possibly a big surprise here in terms of, like, some of the conventions that we're used to in live-action Star Wars storytelling, I think, are going to be thrown out the window for this show. And I think that's exciting.
Yeah, you know, I probably would have been a lot more skeptical pre-Andor, but after being so pleasantly surprised by Andor and how good it was and how different it was, and knowing what I do about Leslie Headland, I watched all of Russian Doll and I really loved it. Knowing the actors involved, I'm hopeful that this can be a new kind of Star Wars TV show. I think that there's definitely all of the elements there to make it that way. So I would honestly be more surprised at this point if it is bad. I am anticipating it to be maybe meh because, you know, never get your hopes up too far, but I am not anticipating it to be something I actively dislike. My hope, of course, is that it's wonderful, but can't be too optimistic.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about Russian Doll because, as I said, I only watched the first few episodes. Does it give you any clues for how you think she would approach a Star Wars TV show? I mean, not to ask you to read too much into it, but, like, impart your wisdom, your Russian Doll wisdom to me about, you know, what we can expect from her in Star Wars.
Well, Russian Doll definitely has at its core a complex female character. So I think that bodes well for having the protagonist of this show hopefully be a complex, but definitely a woman character. So I think that does bode well. There's also a real emphasis on emotions and the ways that characters connect with each other. There are some very beautiful relationships depicted on Russian Doll, both friendships, parental, mentor figures. And I think that sort of mentorish relationship is a big part of how Jedi operate. So that could be an element of it. And the other thing is, Russian Doll is really funny in a very sort of odd way. And of course, it was co-created by Natasha Lyonne, who also starred in it, and Amy Poehler. So both of those are very funny women. But I think it speaks well to her, Leslie Headland's, ability to create something funny, to create something super weird and kind of out there, and something that focuses on women characters with complex motivations and backstories and the relationships that they have with one another and just generally the different kinds of relationships there are out there.
You mentioned that you are familiar with the cast. Have you seen, because Manny Jacinto's in the show.
Yeah,
have you
The
seen
Good Place.
The Good Place. Okay, so do you think that there will be a Bortles reference in The Acolyte, or is that too much to hope for?
I think that's probably too much to hope for. As funny as it would be to see a Jedi Jason Mendoza, because that would be hilarious, I'm actually really looking forward to seeing the actor do a totally different role. Hopefully, totally different role. It would be kind of funny if I say that, and then his role in The Acolyte is a total himbo from Jacksonville, Florida. But I anticipate that will not be the case.
Is it just me, or does this cast seem like the most like conventionally stacked, like the most names that you recognize from other projects?
No, that's just you. No, I think when I think of the Andor cast, there's quite a few of them that I knew from other things. So Diego Luna, main character, Stellan Skarsgård playing Luthen, Harriet Walt, nope. Is it Harriet? No, it's not. Now I have to look.
Oh,
it
the
up.
Woman Wait. Who plays his mom?
Yeah. Fiona
Shaw.
I have to look it up. Fiona Shaw. I was watching another show with Harriet Walter, and I was like, no, that's a different British actress of the same generation who's often in sci-fi things. But no, Fiona Shaw, and Andy Serkis. Yeah, so there were plenty of people in Andor that I knew in other things. And then look at the Obi-Wan Kenobi show. That had plenty of people. Same with Ahsoka, had plenty of people I knew, although that also had a few new actors. But I mean, I knew Mary Elizabeth Winstead and Lars Mikkelsen, and obviously Rosario Dawson. To be fair, I am weirdly into movies and TV, so I do know a lot of actors from a lot of different things. So sorry for undercutting your whole premise of your question there.
Well, I guess when I think about it, like, yes, those people were like well known for things outside of Star Wars, but I feel like these people are a more interesting mix of people who aren't known for sci-fi and fantasy. And so I will be interested to see how they fit into that universe. And I mean, we joked earlier about, you know, about Manny Jacinto. He is a pretty good example of this, of like being really well known, at least among sort of people of our age, for The Good Place, which is a very, very different role than I think he'll be playing here. And, you know, look, these are actors, right? Their whole job is to pretend to be somebody else. I'm not saying that he is the character from The Good Place, but like, when you see a person you recognize, you subconsciously bring in your understanding of what you've seen them in before. And I'll be interested to see how these folks adapt to the Star Wars universe and whether they can really inhabit these characters. Like Stellan, Stellan Skarsgård did a great job, right, of being somebody who comes into Star Wars and just makes that role his own. But I am really excited, frankly, to see this new group of people, these new faces coming into Star Wars, and to see, frankly, I mean, if we really just want to get into it, like a little bit more representation here, like folks who don't look like the Star Wars casts of previous generations. I think we're starting to get to the point where showrunners are like more eager to bring us stories with folks who look like the world around us. So I don't know. That's cool to me.
I think it's really great that Amanda Stenberg, who, as you've pointed out in our notes, is a queer non-binary Black person, is the star. That's awesome. And I will note that she had her start in genre fiction with The Hunger Games being the breakout role, playing Rue in The Hunger Games. So, and then she was also briefly on this show called Sleepy Hollow for a while, which, another genre show. But I'm really excited to see Amandla in this. I think it's such a fun opportunity. I'm really looking forward to it.
And one other thing I'll say, since I can't say anything about Russian Doll because I didn't get through it, but in terms of like forecasting, you know, what are we expecting from Leslie Headland? I do want to just mention that I'm excited about her because of this quote from Kathleen Kennedy. This is from a Vanity Fair article a while back about The Acolyte. And Kennedy said, "She is a gigantic Star Wars fan. What's wonderful about Leslie is she knows it all. I mean, she's read a gazillion books inside the EU. There are little bits and pieces that she's drawing from that no one has explored yet in the on-screen storytelling." So that's very exciting to me. We haven't seen anybody do any real deep cuts from the EU in the darker and more ambiguous part of Star Wars. We've seen, you know, ships getting canonized and, you know, obviously Thrawn has been canonized, right? But like pulling little bits and pieces from the depths of the expanded universe, that is really interesting to me, and that's really exciting. And frankly, there are a lot of EU stories that I think are fertile ground for this show in terms of the characters, the factions, the storylines. I think if she was looking for inspiration and she pulled in some things from the EU, you know, I can't even begin to imagine what that might be, but I'm really, really excited about that.
You know, when we were talking about earlier her quote on an emphasis on villains and anti-heroes, it made me think of an EU book that we actually read for this podcast about Darth Bane. Was that his name?
Yep.
And I don't remember what time period that is, if that's around this time period or what. But it really reminded me of that character. So if she truly is an EU nerd and has read all of those books, I feel like I could see a character like that, if not that actual character, showing up.
Yeah. So Darth Bane, you know, there's a whole can of worms about like how much should we try to sympathize with someone who's like very, very clearly just an evil guy, right? Even though he had trauma in his past, he goes on to weaponize that in a very unhealthy way. It is set about 800 years earlier than this show would be, but I don't know. That doesn't really matter. I mean, the point is just it's before the Skywalker saga. It's at a time when the Jedi and the Sith have a very different relationship than they do in the Skywalker saga. So that part, there is a parallel there, even if the specifics are not exactly the same. But I do think that getting us to rethink how we see the Jedi as an institution, which the Darth Bane books really try to do that to some degree, there's fertile storytelling there too as well. And I think that I don't know what she's pulling in from the EU. I'll be very interested to see if it's like just a little cameo of a character or if it's more like some of the themes, some of the storylines. Again, there's a lot of places that she could go. All right, that's it for this episode of Hoth Takes. Thanks so much for listening to our discussion of The Acolyte. If you want to share your thoughts about this episode or suggest topics for future shows, you can email us at hothtakes@gmail.com. Or you can find us on Twitter, X. We are at Hoth Takes. I'm Eric Geller on Twitter. Grace is Grace_Seegers. And Haley is Birdinator. Speaking of Haley, she made our wonderful logo and banner art. I edited this episode, and I also put together our music, which, as always, we want to point out, all Star Wars music and sound effects is the intellectual property of Lucasfilm. You can find a complete archive of past episodes on our website, hothtakes.wordpress.com. And if you like the show, share it with a friend. You can find Hoth Takes on all the major podcasting platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. We'll see you next time. May the Force be with you.